Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your host, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 122. And I'm very excited to bring you this episode because it's kind of the culmination, if you will, of talking to the fine folks from I-71 Movies. Now, I-71 Movies is a production company based here in Columbus, Ohio, and they have a feature-length film called Dark Iris that is out right now. And two episodes ago, I talked to Derek Talib and Jose Byers, two out of the three people responsible for I-71 Movies. And today, I am going to talk to Rebecca Hart Franklin, who is the third part of that triad that has produced what is a really good feature-length movie, Dark Iris. And actually, to be honest with you, I'm going to take a little side trip here for a moment and let you folks know that if you're in Columbus, Ohio, and you haven't seen Dark Iris, you have an opportunity to do so Friday, June 16th, as at midnight, part of the Film Festival of Columbus, Dark Iris is going to have a showing at the Gateway Film Center. So if you're interested in catching that flick, or even just interested in Focal or the Film Festival of Columbus, all you have to do is go to filmfestivalofcolumbus.com. That's where all the information will be, such as the different seminars, the different movies, all the events that are affiliated with Focal. That kicks off Thursday night and goes through Sunday night. So it's a cool thing to go and experience, especially if you love film. But let's get back to the topic at hand. Rebecca comes on to talk about the many different roles that she's had. She's been an actress. She's been a producer. She has modeled, and she's part of this creative team at I-71 Movies. And I wanted her to come on and give her ideas, her thoughts, her insights into making a movie. And I hope you enjoy it. But before I throw it into my conversation with Rebecca, I do want to thank everybody who chimed in, who stated that they enjoyed the last episode featuring DJ Joey Blaze and Ringside Rand as we talked a little WWE wrestling. Thanks for all the folks that gave great comments. And, you know, don't hesitate. If you like the PVD cast or you don't like the PVD cast, you know, feel free to let me know. That's the only way that this particular podcast is going to get bigger and better. And so with that being said, before we go into a break real quick, I saw this morning that the Big Fun Columbus got a shipment of G.I. Joes in. That's right. And now their G.I. Joe case is full. And if you're like me and you love toys and you love going back and having some nostalgia to when you were a kid, when life was more simple, then you need to visit Big Fun Columbus. It's at 672 North High Street here in Columbus. They got all your toy needs, and maybe if you want to even buy something, go down and see the fine folks down there, because if they don't have it in stock, they'll get it for you. So you can check them out online, facebook.com/BigFunColumbus, or on Twitter, @BigFunColumbus. All right, I know I haven't thrown any love to Big Fun or some of the other folks that I used to, and I need to get back to doing that, but anyways, so that's out of the way, so let's strap ourselves in, buckle your seatbelts as the old cliche goes, and get ready to hear my conversation with Rebecca Hart Franklin. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another installment of the PVD Cast, and I am sitting down today with Rebecca Hart Franklin, and please don't be insulted by this, you are the other third of I-71 Movies. Since we talked to Derek and Jose a couple weeks ago, a pleasure to have you on. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me on. We really appreciate you interviewing I-71 Movies and all that you're doing for us. So thank you so much.
You're quite welcome. So you produce a lot of the projects for I-71 Movies. And maybe some people that are listening at home may not know, what does a producer actually do? What is the key role that a producer does?
Oh my goodness. Well, I think that kind of varies. You have an executive producer who basically kind of funds the movie and sits back and watches, you know, things go. A producer actually is very into the details of working with the director closely of exactly what they're wanting to do and see for the project, the casting, the hiring for the DP, the sound, PAs, AD, I mean, you know, locations. It's literally getting your feet into every single aspect of movie making. And that is what a producer does. So
Did you find that to be a challenge because you also act in many of the projects of I-71 movies? So did you find yourself maybe sometimes overwhelmed, maybe sometimes frustrated by the fact that you wore many, many hats, as did everyone else in the productions?
Well, for the movie Dark Iris, let me see. We had to wear like 20 hats all at one time, acting, producing, doing many things. I didn't find it frustrating. It was actually one of the very first times I had applied that to an actual filmmaking process. Before, I had always worked on the sets, but instead of when I'm on set, instead of just kind of talking or being on my phone, what I actually do is I pay attention to all the details of what's going on. What everyone's process is. And so that's how I picked up a lot of my learning skills and experience was by watching and just reading about things and making myself aware of like all the lingo and literally studying things. Researching is what I do like all day because I want to be the best at what I do. So when I knew it was time to make a movie and I did not have, well, I had like some producing skills such as like 48-hour films and some shorter films, but this was a bigger, feature length film, which is a whole different beast. So, I don't know how we got through that. I mean, it's like, it was crazy because it was literally us working 12 to 18 hour days, 14 day time, 14 to 15 day time, is what we had to make this film. And, oh, we just, I don't know. I look back on it. And I think, how in the hell did we do that? That is pretty amazing
Yeah,
accomplishment for us.
that is a short amount of time to get something done, and I marvel at the fact that you guys did such a great job of getting Dark Iris put together. You know what? Let's go ahead and just talk about Dark Iris a little bit, and then we'll come back. I have some other questions about your background, but let's start real quick. For those that maybe did not listen to episode 120, can you just give a brief, maybe 2 sentence summary of what the film's about?
Dark Iris is about this girl named Iris who claims that she has a stalker, and she reports this to the local police. An FBI agent shows up at her door, and come to find out that people around her are dying. And so she ends up in the middle of this investigation while a stalker who happens to be a part of a Hyde project, a black ops specially trained killer is after her. And so throughout the movie, we come to find out that Iris has a secret of her own.
Okay. And you play the character Tara Black in the film.
I do.
Can you describe who the character is, what her role is in the movie, and whatnot, without giving away too much?
I don't know how that's possible. That's a hard one. It really is because that's the, kind of a sort of twist with the movie
Okay.
is my character. So whenever we were actually putting the character roles out and who were playing which parts, we didn't say anything about Tara Black because of that reason. But
So you kept it a secret from
let's
everyone?
yeah,
Okay.
until people saw it. So let's just say that she follows Iris closely and she's involved in a lot of the action surrounding her. So
And if you want to know more about the character, watch the movie. There you go. Enough said.
there you go. Yeah, and it will be out soon.
Well, let's talk though. I did see while doing some research that you did quite a bit of training for your role. I guess you could say, I don't know whether it's stunts or whether to consider it like fighting or choreography or whatever, but you did quite a bit of training. So how'd you go about getting somebody prepared to train you in those physical aspects of the role?
Right, the fight choreography. We actually had Tom Basso, who helped out with the fight choreography, as well as Derek Talib, the director and co-owner of I-71 Movies. We literally had just a couple of days of fight training, and we went through the motions and the moves, and what they did was videotape me. And so I watched it back over and over to learn the, the fights and the moves. But that's pretty much how it happened. With not much pre-production and an indie film, there's not a lot of time given to you. It's not like a big film project big budget project where you're given like 4 to 5 months to sit there and train and get big and learn all the fight moves, you know, that's just like not even happening with our productions, you know, at this point with any indie film. But so it was literally like a couple of days learning this, watching it over on video over and over and over while doing production and all these other things going on within the movie. So
were there any injuries?
Not with myself, okay. But I think with some other people like Gina Ferraro, she does the music and she plays Simone, one of our mercs. I think that she got some pretty big bruises. And I know Mary Lee Osborne, Agent Fry, she has a big fight scene. She got pretty banged up as well.
Okay. All right. But nothing major.
Well, normally for these things, you would hire like a stunt person or a double. But, you know, this is what we deal with. This is the sacrifices we make for these films.
So, in other words, kids, don't try this at home.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have any great stories about Derek or Jose while on the set? Because I think they shared a couple about you, both on air and off air. Do you have any great stories you'd like to share?
Oh, my goodness. What did they say? Well, you know, it was...
They said that you were awesome... when it came to budgeting, like you are the best accountant ever.
I know. I pretty much had that project down to a T with my budget. It was pretty crazy, and I can whip out a budget fast. It's impressive to me even. But
no stories about those two guys.
No, I mean, I'm thinking, well, I mean, I have stories like outside of the project, but like during the project, all I can remember is just working. Like, there was no time really to talk and stop and laugh. We literally worked our tails off for this project. So, goodness, I'm so bad. They're going to go, what? Well, don't you remember this? Don't you remember this? And then I'm going to think later, why did I say that? Oh, my gosh. You know, that's how it goes, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So did you get any feedback from some critics? I know there's been a couple reviews out there. And let me ask you this. How do you feel about the criticisms or the praise that has come out for Dark Iris?
Well, you know, I think it's, I think we accept any and all criticism and praise, of course. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is what we think about is the money and the time that went into this movie. We feel like we came out with a pretty amazing project for what was given to us. And we're pretty proud of it. Yeah, could things have been better? Could things have been, we had a little bit more, you know, fancier shots. Yes, of course. But for what we have turned out, we feel, I don't know, I'm fine with it. So when someone says, like, I think the review was about all dark haired girls. Yeah, I can see that. We need to work on casting some beautiful redheads and more blondes. I think that was one of the things that, a lot of people had said, well, I got confused with all of the brunettes in the movie. But there was also a reason to them being in it. And I can't really tell you much about why we cast them because you have to see the movie. I think when it really releases, we can give like a more in-depth interview about the specifics.
Sure, sure.
And some spoilers, but...
Well, let's talk about the movie coming out because a couple weeks ago when Derek and Jose were on, I believe that your distribution agent was in Cannes. Has there been any updates, any news, anything you could talk about that came out from that particular aspect of distribution?
Yeah, he came back with us and he said he had some really positive feedback and he we're giving him like a couple of months to solidify any, you know, any...
distribution deals or anything along those lines?
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking of something else, but I couldn't. But yeah, exactly. Any distribution deals. And, you know, he's working hard for us, and that's all we, you know, can hope for. So we're, you know, just very hopeful, and it's just a waiting game at this point, which is hard for us, but that's how it goes. We're actually, we're in the Film Festival of Columbus for Dark Iris. We are officially selected, and we are showing on June 16th at the midnight showing. So we're very happy about that. So if anyone wants to get out there that didn't happen to make it to our premiere, now is your time to see it. Because I don't think we're going to be able to show it again in Ohio unless it gets accepted by another festival.
Okay. Will it be streaming anytime soon? Like, I know, obviously nowadays, Netflix, Hulu, all of those streaming services are so hungry for content.
Right.
Any possibility we could see Dark Iris on Netflix or one of those other streaming services?
Yeah, and that's what our distribution is working with us. Definitely in 2 months, regardless of what happens, it will be on, what is it?
Voodoo?
Yeah,
Yeah,
Vudu is
okay.
like iTunes, Amazon. So it will definitely be on those in a couple of months.
Cool. Well, let's go back a little bit and talk a little bit about you. So originally you're from Ketterington, Ohio.
Oh yeah, I was born in Kettering, Ohio, and my parents moved us when I was just 3 years old to Oklahoma. But I have family there still, and I spent all my summers in Ohio, visiting my grandmother and my cousins and my aunts and uncles. So Ohio has always held a special place in my heart.
And so now you're in the Washington, D.C. area.
Right.
What led you to go to D.C.? Professional opportunities, personal situations, or what?
Well, my husband is in the military, so
Oh, okay.
he moves us around quite a bit. So he actually is working at the Pentagon right now, and so we're stationed here for another year. But yeah, we lived everywhere. We lived in Alaska, Florida, but it's a great,
Did you say Alaska?
yeah, we lived in Alaska for like a couple of years.
How was Alaska?
I mean, it's great. It's cold. It's the summers are like 60 and it's freezing. And I had this friend who was like, "Oh my gosh, the sun's out and it's 60 degrees. Come lay out with me." And I was like, "What?" Because we're like, I mean, but that's hot to them. And
Yeah.
yeah, and I'm used to like 90 degrees, sweating and stuff. So it was a very interesting experience, the whole daylight aspect of it being daylight until like 3 to 4 in the morning sometimes, and having to get those like blackout blinds. And
Yeah,
that was
I imagine
different.
it would be kind of a little bit of a different way of life, or I should say, or actually a whole different like life cycle if you're up there and
Yeah.
you got night for 20 out of 24 hours and daylight 20 out of 24 hours. That would be wacky.
It is wacky. I mean, we went out one night and we came out of the bar like at 2 o'clock, and we're like, "Whoa, it's still daylight. This is crazy." And it really is. But I mean, it's something that you get used to, and I think people still go by the normal bedtimes of 10 or so. Just they get those blackout blinds and live their lives like the lower 58.
Yeah. All right. You are a contracted model with several different agencies, and have done a variety of different campaigns. How did you get started in modeling?
That's right. It's lifestyle modeling. I started in Florida. We had just moved to Florida. My oldest was 3, my youngest was 1, and I was scouted by a company called Model Scout Bennett. And they said that, I should model, and I was just like, what are you talking about? I'm in my 30s and I'm a mom. And they're like, "Well, there is opportunities for people like you." And it was like a growing industry in that sort of aspect, where it wasn't just for supermodels. A lot of people, lifestyle models, and a lot of different looks, and a lot of different ages, and a lot of different shapes and sizes were, becoming a bigger market for those types of appearances. So I was like, okay. And so I started looking up what I thought originally was the supermodels back in the day just grew up and became the models. I really didn't dig into it. I had no clue, to be honest. I didn't know how it all went. So I was like, okay, I'll give it a go. And I took pictures, and they got me signed with Click Models of Atlanta. And I worked for a major ad campaigns like Mars Corporation, who owns like M&M's and all them. So I did the Mars Drinks Flavia campaign, which was really cool. It was out in magazines and billboards. And then I did another one called Lee and Nisa USA. It's a South American, sort of like Victoria's Secret. I did a catalog for them, and a bunch of other things. So it really opened the doors for a lot of stuff. My agent, Julie Martin, at the time, she doesn't work there anymore, the director, she said that we needed to take acting classes to it would help us out on set when we do commercials. And I was like, well, actually, I've taken like 10 years of acting, you know, school. And so I actually got back into it again in Florida with some great ladies, Anne Marie Crouch, who was actually on the Power Rangers a long time ago as like Princess Shayla or something like that. And she was my teacher, along with Darla Briganti at Class Act Studio. And they really are amazing women, and they helped me, you know, get back into acting and brush up on my skills. So,
well, and that was one thing I was going to ask. You started taking acting lessons, if I remember correctly, to deal with some anxiety issues.
You fell
in love with it. And I think some of the listeners, I totally understand that. I get that. That makes sense to me. But some of the listeners may think, wait a minute. You have to get up in front of strangers? Wouldn't that cause more anxiety?
Well, that's the thing, is that I didn't want to rely on taking like any medicine, you know, for anxiety. And I know a lot of people do that, and that's fine. But for me, I just wanted to, it was like a fear I wanted to overcome, you know. So, and it happened at a very young age when I was in my 20s. I had just strong anxiety. It was really hard for me to talk to people, person to person. And so I thought, I need to put myself out there more. I literally threw myself in speech classes and acting classes and script analysis and theater, classical, and, you know, all of these classes. It's crazy to even think about, but I was just very determined to overcome my anxiety, and it worked. It worked a great deal. I would definitely recommend doing that.
And I think, to me, it makes sense, because if I may, just for a moment, to me, I can understand where if somebody is anxious, I think that sometimes people, I don't know how to describe it, but being in front of large groups of people is not anxiety causing, because I don't know, I think for some people, like myself, being in front of a large group of people, there's not that like singular interaction that you have to worry about. You know what I mean? Like, I think to me that it makes perfect sense. When I, doing research, I read that. I said, to me, that makes perfect sense. Some other folks maybe would think, and I've had people go, oh my God, you talk in front of 200 people? That would be, and I, you know, but it makes sense to me. You get a chance to just kind of work on talking to everyone instead of one person. And I think to me, it makes perfect sense how that would help to release and ease your anxiety.
Yeah, and sometimes I would even force myself to be last, because what you do when you're last, you that anxiety builds and builds and builds and builds, and it's like an overwhelming feeling. Your just heart is pumping, your like mouth is going dry, you're, you know, shaking, and I just sat there and like put myself through that torture, and I was just like, deal with this, Rebecca, like get out of this phase. And then pretty soon I was just like, you know, I'm pretty good with this.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't taken as many acting classes, nor have I spoke in large groups. But I mean, I think it's perfectly normal for people to be a little nervous. And I would call it nervous. I wouldn't call it anxiety. But back then it was, I had anxiety.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hopefully this podcast is not causing you any anxiety. So.
No, not at all. It's just, I don't talk about myself often, like in this sort of form. And when I do, I'm the type of person who likes to hear more about the other person than myself.
Okay.
And a lot of people have always said that, who are close to me, that it's really hard to get to, not know me, but it's like over a course of time. Like, I don't give too much away out in one setting.
Well, let's talk about a couple of the other projects that you've been involved with for both I-71 movies and some other upcoming projects. You were in St. Gabriel, which Derek had talked about a couple episodes ago, that it was a television project, if you will, that was going to go multiple episodes. And I think that, was it only 3 episodes or 4 episodes that got completed, if I remember correctly?
I think about a couple episodes have filmed in their entire completion. Now, we haven't put those together, but the whole point was to build up these trailers and a sort of a tease of like 15 minutes to show like what we potentially had in mind for this show. Now it's changed a lot, you know, since the beginning, but yeah, so that's how I actually met these guys. Is I, on IMDb, I answered a breakdown, which is a casting call for a role on St. Gabriel. And it was actually for Annette, who was a supporting role. And I auditioned for her role, and Derek emailed me back and he said, no, I actually want you to audition for this other girl. And I thought, oh gosh, she didn't like me. So he gave me like a lesser, you know, side role, but he actually ended up sending me back the slides for the lead role, Beatrice Quinn. And I immediately just fell in love with her character and the whole premises of St. Gabriel and the story. And I mean, even what's out there right now, a lot of people don't even know like the surface of St. Gabriel. It is so deep. And even we have a literary agent that, no, actually Derek does, that he submitted St. Gabriel to. And, you know, just even that first layer, she doesn't know the whole complex details about everybody. There's so many characters. It's a pretty amazing story. It's literally like a sort of Game of Thrones with, you know, all of the characters and how they all intertwine and, you know, meet up with each other eventually in the end. But there's so much to it. And I honestly think that if given in the right hands, that this show can be the next big thing, like The Walking Dead, like Game of Thrones mm-hmm. is.
You were also in Code 207, which was an entry for the 48-hour Film Fest. And you played Christine, is it Bodwin?
Yeah, you're perfect.
There you go. Well, I had a little bit of help on that one, I'm not going to lie.
Oh,
but okay.
My gosh. Okay. Yeah, the whole theater could not, I mean, the theater, every single person who was on a team could not pronounce. I mean, it was funny to watch. No one could get that name pronounced correctly. Like, but we would all have been disqualified just on...
Well, you were the producer on the project. You also played Christine, who was the former Olympic athlete, which was one of the characters you were given in the 48-hour Film Fest.
Right, yes.
To recap for the listeners, in that particular competition, you're given a line of dialogue, a character, a prop, and a genre, and then you have to make it work on those four things. Did I forget anything? No, those are the four, right? I think so.
Yeah. It's been so long, I can't remember, but yes, I believe that's it.
And you ended up winning an award for your performance.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Yeah, it's right there.
It's right there in your house.
I have it set up, my first award. I won Best Actress, which was shocking to me. I was, like, so shocked. I walked up on stage, and people thought I was, like, so full of myself with my acceptance speech. But I was totally kidding around. But, I mean, it was pretty amazing. I was so honored, and, I was shocked that it was pleasantly surprised.
I'll say it was a unique short film. I watched it, and Derek, as you would hear if you listen to episode 120, it was a little out there. It was a little bizarre, and... from what I understand, it could have been more bizarre, but they had to reel some people in.
Yeah, well, Tim Novotny is a horror filmmaker, and so, you know, it could have been a little bloody, but bloodier, I don't even know. But, he had to reel him back a bit. But the thing is that when you go to these 48-hour film competitions, I was recently in one before the Columbus one in Richmond, and so it was like a lot of the same sort of material. A lot of people trying too hard to be interesting and unique in the same sort of way. I can't really explain it. I'm not like knocking anybody, but I was just like, we really need to do something that's like stands out, you know.
And it's a good story. Stories always drive whatever your production is. And if you don't have a good story, it doesn't matter.
I mean, it's very true, and it's a serious matter, you know.
Sure.
And something that we would love to touch on and make into a feature film someday.
Well, let's talk about a couple of upcoming projects, excuse me. You have a couple of projects for Investigation Discovery coming up soon? Are those still in the works?
No, they've already been released.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I worked on two reenactment series as the lead role, and Ice Cold Killers, and that was episode, like, four? Oh, I can't remember the episode. My goodness, I wish I would have pulled this up for you, but Ice Cold Killers... Season 4, perhaps, 07. Anyways, I got to work in Alaska for that, which was great to go back again. They flew me to Alaska, and, you know, I got to lay in the snow. And
have your blackout blinds again so you can sleep.
Yeah, exactly.
Was the other project called Nightmare Next Door?
Yeah, Nightmare Next Door. And I was actually a a country music producer. It's a true story. I mean, these are true stories, and it's great that I'm getting this job, but at the same time, I mean, there's like a lot of
you're wondering sadness. What the you're like, what the hell is up with these people here?
I know, and it's sad to like sit there and relive out their, you know, it's reenacting out their crime scene and going through the motions of like what they, you know, what supposedly happened to them. And a lot of it is improv, because, you know, we don't know exactly what's being said. But it's like sort of along, you know, the lines of what could potentially happen. But, you know, when I'm watching this on TV, I'm like, are these killers in prison watching this movie? And how scary is that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you don't think about stuff like that.
No, you wouldn't think that they're in that room going, hey, Bubba, that's me, you know, like,
yeah. I
mean, you know.
Yeah, who's that playing that girl? Like, I'm going to, and that's what I think, and I'm just like, I don't need to be doing these anymore.
One other thing that I found, a CW pilot might be in the works.
Okay, yeah, I actually shot that last year.
Okay.
I got hired by one of the most famous directors, David Nutter, who is called the Pilot Whisperer. And he has worked on Game of Thrones. He's directed Game of Thrones episodes, and you'll have to look him up. He's a pretty amazing and talented man. He hired me. I auditioned right in front of him to be on a co-starring role as Vivian Russo for the Untitled Paranormal Project. It was out last year. It was with Jessica Shores. She was on Gossip Girl. I don't know if you know her as Vanessa. And Megan West, and she was like, she's an indie actress and an Australian actor. I can't remember his name, but it hasn't got picked up. I'm not sure what they're going to do with it, but they spent a lot of money and had a huge production on this. Kevin Williamson.
Oh yeah, from Dawson's Creek.
Yeah, he was the executive producer of it and on The Vampire Diaries. He was there on set every day, and he was a very amazing man. I have a picture with him in my costume, but it's kind of a thing where you can't really say, like, what's going on, or, I mean, I can't at this point.
Right, sure.
Last year, but I can't post, like, any pictures or because we don't know what's going on with this project, so.
Kevin Williamson.
It's kind of sad.
Yeah.
I would love to have seen myself on the CW, but I guess that's how things go. There's a lot of pilots that get made that don't, you know, make it to the network. So.
Kevin Williamson was behind Scream as well, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
I get flack sometimes because I admit that I watched a lot of Dawson's Creek, especially the first few seasons, because it was a well-written show. I know it wasn't the target audience, or I was not the target audience, but it was a well-written show.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great writer, and this show seemed like it was very promising. I liked it, and I mean, but I guess it just didn't show well, or maybe something else took its place, or maybe they'll revisit it again later. And I was thinking, well, they did this whole production of it. Why don't they just release it as like a short movie or something? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. How do you prepare for these different roles? Like, you're going from a psychopathic country music producer, you know, to, because was the country music producer the killer in that episode?
No,
you were the victim.
She got killed. I was the victim. Okay. Yeah.
Well,
it seems like a lot of the males do the killing.
So how do you go from playing all these different characters? Like, what's your mindset when you're ready and you're getting prepared for a role? Do you have a method, or?
I don't. Which is crazy, but I know a lot of people like to do method acting, which means that they're in it the entire time. But I like to research a lot about, you know, who a person is. And what I like to do is get the breakdown on the character from the writer and the director, and what the breakdown is basically, you know, her whole background and who this person is. And so I like to tap in some sort of, I don't know, part of me that can relate to this person. Mm-hmm. And if not, I make myself, you know, I don't know. It's just a lot of sitting there reading the lines and throwing myself into it. But I mean, it's kind of easy for me to go in and out of character. A lot of people on Dark Iris were actually telling me that, because I had to go from acting to producing like within, you know, a second. And I'd be like, okay, I'm here to do my stuff. And then I would get into it and they were just like, I don't see how you can do that. But it's something that, you know, comes easy for me to do. And I just make myself do it.
Okay. So who are some of your heroes or heroines, if you would like to go that way, in film? Who are some of the folks that you like watching? Favorite actors, actresses, movies, whatnot?
Oh my gosh, I know that I should have this ready for you. That is so bad! Who are my favorite actresses? You know, one of the people that I have always loved, and I follow her on Instagram, is Juliette Lewis. She is such a odd, eccentric person, and I love that about people. Just from ever since she was younger, you know, what she was like the what's that story with Chevy Chase? It was the Christmas story.
Yeah, Christmas Vacation. Yeah.
Christmas Vacation. Yeah, like from that until, you know, Natural Born Killers, mm-hmm. and you know, her playing the oh goodness, I can't even think.
She was also in What's Eating Gilbert Grape, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
and there's a ton of credits that she's been in.
Yeah, and I just love her. She can transform into any person and play any role, you know. She's amazing, and it doesn't seem like she takes herself serious or she's too into herself. Mm-hmm. She's a very humble person, and she just, you know, acts without making herself look good. You know, there's a lot of actresses out there who I feel like are concerned with how they're looking at the moment, and she just seems to be all in, you know, all in it, mm-hmm. every time. And that's just really inspiring to me as an actor to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I'm very excited and proud of all the women actors, directors, producers, crew members out there today. It's, you know, it has always been a man's world, and you know, we're slowly making our mark into it, and, you know, putting ourselves out there. But I think that's great. I like it.
What advice would you have for anybody who wants to make their own film? Do you have any advice?
I would say to just do it. I know that's, I know a lot of people, I think what happens is everyone has that in common, and, you know, they're waiting on investments. But I would say to just pull in your resources, and if you have, you know, make a film together. Director, cinematographer, gaffer, sound, you know, just start going after it and getting your experiences in and building up your credits, doing that sort of thing. There's no shame in that. Just start making a movie.
There you go. It only takes one step, right? You got to take one step in order to run a marathon.
That one step leads to the next big step, leads to the next big step, and you keep going, and then all of a sudden you look back one day and you're just like, look how far I've come.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty amazing. That's how I feel with us too.
Well, do you have any social media that you would like to plug, as we're getting close to the time where we need to start wrapping things up, Rebecca? So where can people find you on the interwebs, if you will?
I am, my name is Rebecca Hart Franklin, and that's Rebekah Hart, Hart Franklin, at Instagram, Letta Bird, LettaBird. I believe I'm just Facebook and Instagram, so...
And I also don't believe anybody calls it the interwebs, but I just
I just went along with it.
all right. And of course, let's also plug I-71 Movies as well, i71movies.com, and on Twitter at I-71 Movies, and of course Vimeo as well, where you can catch all of these great projects, either in their entirety, such as Code 207, and or in their various different preview formats, in which you will see Rebecca Hart Franklin there.
Thank you so much for the interview, John. I appreciate it.
No problem. I'm going to throw it to a quick break, ladies and gentlemen, and on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up this episode. So if you will, please, stick around. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Rebecca Hart Franklin, talking about making movies, making films. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you did, let me know. Feel free to. You can shoot me an email at johnorlando@pvdcast.com, or you can let me know on Twitter. My handle on Twitter, of course, is at PVDMVP, or you can even leave me a note through Facebook, facebook.com/PVDcast. Let me know what you thought about it. Again, I hope that you enjoyed it. And again, I'm going to mention that if you're in Columbus and you want to catch Dark Iris, midnight showing, June 16th, Gateway Film Center, part of Focal, the Film Festival of Columbus. And if you need any details, you can check out filmfestivalofcolumbus.com to get schedules for not only Dark Iris, but all of the festivities that are going on over the weekend, celebrating independent film here in the capital city. I would like to talk a little bit about next episode, because for some odd reason, I know what it's going to be. All right, episode 121, Ringside Rand, DJ Joey Blaze were on. We were talking wrestling, and we just got so caught up in the moment that we just rolled a whole lot of tape, so to speak. And so you're going to hear the second part to our conversation. We're going to talk a little more about professional wrestling, only this time we're going to talk about Ring of Honor. We're going to talk about TNA or Impact Wrestling. We're going to talk about a variety of issues. So that's coming up here next week. But I also want to mention that I last night had the opportunity to meet yet another person affiliated with Dark Iris. That's right. Co-writer David Gwynn. And I think that if you've listened to the episode where Derek and Jose from I-71 Movies were on, he was mentioned many times, and he's a very, very enthusiastic gentleman. I got the opportunity to meet him through a MOFA meeting, the Mid-Ohio Filmmakers Association meeting that I went to. And so I'm going to try to schedule that with him and have him come on here, hopefully within the next few weeks, and we'll get an idea again about filmmaking, but from the perspective of writing it, because I think that's a totally different beast than being an actor or anything along those lines. So, well, I've already told you where you can get in touch with me, but I'll do it one more time. You can email me, johnorlando@pvdcast.com, facebook.com/pvdcast, or on Twitter at pvdmvp. And I am very happy to say that I have a new platform in which you can get this great podcast. That's right, Pod Paradise has added the PVDcast to their lineup. So, and I know Stephen Hines, good friend of the show, he is incredibly, incredibly excited about this, because that's where he gets all of his podcasts from. So definitely look for the PVDcast on Pod Paradise or on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, even Stitcher Radio, and of course, PVDcast.com, the online home of yours truly. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for listening, and I will chat at each and every one of you later.